Welcome to the Sexual Mindfulness Project podcast, where we talk about creating an intentional relationship and how to find joy in slowing down, letting go of judgment, and connecting more deeply with your partner. I'm Dr. Shalom Levitt, and today I'm here with Amber Price, Rebecca Clark, and Jenna Lawler. Welcome to this episode of the Sexual Mindfulness Podcast. Today we're going to talk about motherhood and all the challenges that may come with that. It's interesting because I saw an experiment a while back about the same woman dressed in a provocative kind of low-cut blouse sitting in a mall, and they recorded the comments that people around her made. And by and large, when this woman was showing cleavage in kind of this sexy way, it was positive comments, lots of attention, and most of it was positive. However, when the same woman brought her young child, her young nursing child, to this same bench in the mall and nursed in public, she got a lot of shameful comments, a lot of negative comments about nursing in public. And it's interesting because breasts have two different purposes in many people's minds. One is to be sexual, and one is to, you know, provide nourishment for a child. And we do not like to see those two overlap. In fact, Iris Young made the comment, "Breasts are a scandal because they shatter the border between motherhood and sexuality." And that's a struggle that a lot of women have to come to terms with. Once we become mothers, we feel like it's hard to integrate sexuality into that. Or if we do, we maybe feel a little shame or judgment from people around us.
Yeah, I do think that sometimes we tend to see motherhood as incompatible with sexuality. One of our kind of folklore stories in my family growing up was that my youngest sister one time announced proudly, after learning a little bit about sexual intimacy, apparently, she said, "Well, now I know that you have had," announcing to my mom and dad, "that you have had sex three times, and that's it." And because there were three kids in our family, so that must be the sum total of our parents' sexual experiences. But I think we carry that little kid perspective sometimes into adulthood, where we feel like motherhood and sexuality just don't or shouldn't overlap for some reason. And so I think her perspective is actually kind of capturing maybe a deeper societal truth.
What do you think it is that we don't like to think of our parents as sexual?
I've heard Jennifer Finlayson Fife talk about it as almost like a protection, because sexuality is not supposed to occur between a parent and a child. And so it's natural that feels a little like, ooh, we don't want to think about that. And that's okay. But it also is natural and okay to acknowledge that your parents are sexual beings with each other, and that's a normal and natural part of life. And that's good.
I think it is uncomfortable for us to acknowledge that our parents have desire, you know, have, and maybe even unmet needs within their relationship. And so I think it makes them a little more vulnerable than what we're used to thinking of them as these rocks, as this impenetrable, you know, perfect kind of person in our life who, yeah, even if they have a few weaknesses, they're not huge flaws. And I think somehow, maybe because of societal attitudes, maybe we think that sexual desire, sexual need is, you know, something that they shouldn't have as these kind of perfect examples to us.
There's something too that's intriguing, like thinking back over from my memories of my childhood and watching my parents. And I remember feeling so comforted when I would see them, like a hug or hold hands or kiss or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I remember it's been sweet to watch my own kids respond to just the same thing with me and my husband. It's like they're looking and saying like, "Ooh, yuck," but you can tell there's a measure of security in that kids want to know that parents are unified. And I think that's a really positive, healthy signal. So there's there's an interesting, maybe it just has to do with the, you know, the amount of what we can and don't imagine and don't want to imagine, but with our parents, but I do think it's healthy for kids to see parents, you know, hold hands and express physical affection in the kitchen or at church or wherever, just kind of day-to-day life. I think that's really healthy and securing for kids.
I wonder too, though, if it's kind of a natural instinct for kids to think moms exist to serve their needs. And so to assume that mom and dad have needs or desires or wants of their own might be just sort of like, what? That's mm-hmm. not real. And so maybe that's where a little bit of the disconnect comes in.
Yeah, I think it takes them out of their thought process that my parents are really here for me. That's why they exist.
And how healthy is that for them to actually see that, though? You know, that their parents are independent and do have their own lives separate.
Yeah, and certainly in appropriate ways, I think it's good for us to talk about the fact that we really enjoy sex with our husband or wife. And talk about that with our children so that they know sex is this really meaningful part of mom and dad's life. And we don't have to get into details, you know, we don't want to, and they certainly don't want us to, but I think that that's a healthy example of allowing sex to be this beautiful part of a committed relationship. So let's talk about as women transition to motherhood, oftentimes, they face a lot of body image issues. They have allowed their body to grow this human being inside of them. And oftentimes, their body is remodeled permanently. You know, it's going to be a little saggier in places. Hips sometimes don't always go back to their pre-pregnancy position. And so may even carry a little more weight after pregnancy than they did pre-pregnancy, but certainly things change. And so women have to kind of come to terms with those changes.
I'm just thinking about, there's a couple of girls, the Beauty Redefined girls, who do a lot around body image and things. And their slogan is, your body is an instrument, not an ornament. And I think that that's such an important thing to remember, that your body just did what it was intended to do as an instrument. It just grew a baby and gave birth to a baby. And there are other things that it's intended to do. And one of those is to share sexual experiences with a partner. And that's not about what it looks like. If it's functioning well as an instrument, that's what it's really about. And I think you have to challenge in yourself that tendency that we all have to measure your worth by what you look like, and whether that's stretch marks or the new weight or whatever. That's not where your worth lies. Your worth lies in who you are, and your body is a vehicle to help you be that person.
I love that. I love your idea, Shalom, about that, the term just remodeled permanently about our bodies. I think that's such a perfect way to put it, because it's like this act of building something and creation, and it shouldn't go back to how it was before. I mean, we are changed. I think if you ask anybody what's been the most powerful moment of your life, and it's having children is one of the really fundamentally changing of kind of who you are and your identity and everything that goes with that. And so to have your body change along with it seems to make a lot of sense to me. That's just an almost outward manifestation of what is going on kind of inside into your spirit, into your heart, into your mind. To have these markers outside makes a lot of sense to me. And to try to learn to embrace those. Like when I see pregnant women and I think, oh, they're so beautiful. I hope they know they're so beautiful. And I remember not feeling very beautiful when I was pregnant, or especially after the pregnancy, when I think, I can't even tell that I had my baby. I still look pregnant for 6 more weeks. And I just think there's something really pretty about that thought, remodeled permanently, that we're remodeled permanently.
I also think that social media plays a very large role in how new mothers kind of, or even pregnant women who are getting, you know, getting to that point of giving birth, how they view their bodies. I follow a few influencers, and some of them have kids, and they seem to bounce back. I'm saying that in quotation marks, because it's a weird standard that I have seen on social media, where women are expected to get back to their pre-pregnancy bodies, and as if they never gave birth. And so this one woman, she gave birth, or she had a baby, and she had, you know, a full set of abs like the same week. And I was just, I mean, as someone who hasn't given birth yet, I almost expected that to be my standard, and like, oh, I want that to be me after I give birth, right? I want to like as if I never had a baby. But recently I saw another woman post, she had a baby about a week or two ago, and she posted just a picture of herself, and she showed her stomach, and I looked at that picture and I just felt so differently about how your body changes during pregnancy in such a good way. And it almost brought me to tears because I had never seen a woman's stomach after she has given birth. That was the first time that I'd seen that before. And it was beautiful and it was vulnerable. And I really viewed that as beautiful. You know, her stomach was different. It was a little bit saggy. You know, there were stretch marks. And I just thought, wow, you know, our bodies are so amazing. And we don't need to hold them to a certain standard. We don't all need to, you know, expect our bodies to look the same way and to be a certain way, but to appreciate how our bodies look and what they've done. My whole perception of how a woman's body is supposed to be in, like, considering beauty standards completely changed. And I just appreciate a woman's ability to give birth so much more.
Yeah, women's bodies are pretty amazing. I think of this mindfulness thought as a woman's body changes during pregnancy and then changes after pregnancy. And there's this idea that we don't say to a seed, why aren't you a flower? Instead, we plant the seed, we water it, we take care of it, and we watch it develop into, you know, a little stem and a couple leaves. And we don't say to the couple, to the stem and the leaves, why aren't you a beautiful vine yet? Instead, you know, we wait and we're patient, and then it flowers, and you know, it continues to go through its cycle. And what's sad is that we sometimes don't allow ourselves to go through this cycle of pregnancy and then getting back to our body post-pregnancy and being okay with it. Like recognizing that the development we're going through at this moment is actually quite beautiful. It's not like when we were a teenager or in our early 20s and or whenever. We shouldn't be comparing it to any other time, but actually just appreciating what we're experiencing at this moment. One other thing that women often experience along with all the changes in their body is a lot of fatigue because they are taking care of this newborn baby. Possibly they have other children, or if they're just transitioning to parenthood, taking care of a baby is a very new experience. And a lot of moms and dads are experiencing fatigue, which absolutely impacts their sexual drive. Any ideas about dealing with fatigue and being compassionate, kind to yourself during this time?
I think we touched on this on a previous episode when we talked about pregnancy, but I think what you just said is being compassionate with yourself, but also knowing this time doesn't last forever. You might be tired and it might feel like forever when you are tired, but I have teenagers now and I'm on the flip side where I'm trying to get them up and out of bed before noon sometimes. And, you know, it's not going to last forever, but I think also letting yourself be a priority, being tired does matter. And you are going to be tired when you have a newborn, but taking care of yourself matters a lot. That needs to be a priority for you. And that can translate sexually. And I think we'll end up talking about that more. But your needs matter also.
Yeah. And that kind of goes along with another point that I think we wanted to talk about was the fact that we're always serving others. You just mentioned, you know, now you're getting teenagers out of bed. And so despite the fact that at the beginning of motherhood, when we've just transitioned into motherhood, we're pretty tired from taking care of little children and all of their constant needs. But even as motherhood progresses and we have teenagers or adult children, we are constantly caught up in serving others, which is really a beautiful part of motherhood and really develops us into more complete beings. But just like you mentioned, if we're not carving out time for ourselves, that can get really burdensome and impact how we feel about our relationship with our partner and ourselves sexually.
I think the sexual part of it can become, instead of become something where it's connective and relationship building, it feels like one more thing, one more person to take care of on your long to-do list of taking care of others. And that's not great for you or for your partner. And when you can kind of try to spin that and let it be maybe a little bit more self-centered, I think that's kind of counter to how moms often think. We don't often do things for ourselves, but when you can kind of spin that and say, you know, my needs matter too, and I can be a little bit selfish sometimes or let somebody serve me, that can actually make a big difference.
I think it's important to learn, I think especially in a sexual relationship and especially for women, because we know that women do tend to actually even rank sexual experiences based on their partner's experience. When they ask women in research studies, did you enjoy your sexual experience? They found that women were actually answering kind of in lieu of their partner instead of answering what it was for them. And so getting out of that space, I think it's really important and really key to making sex be a regenerative thing instead of, like Amber said, just another person to take care of. If you can look at it as a connective time and as a time where you can focus on your spouse and on yourself, that's really important. Just that focus on what would feel good to me, what would be important for me right now, what do I need and what do I want, and allowing that to happen, I think, is really important.
I always like to remind couples that we can have that connection without penetrative intercourse, right? I mean, sometimes going to that effort to have penetrative sex may be a little too exhausting. And so what's nice is to just do something else that creates that connection with each other. Maybe it's a long embrace. Maybe it's just talking about some emotions that have come up recently and finding the connection emotionally with each other. Maybe it's not saying a word, but just kind of rediscovering each other's body and not necessarily feeling pressure to move into penetrative sex. One other thing that oftentimes we talk about in the transition to motherhood is all of the different hormones and chemistry that's going on in our body. We know that, you know, some of the really important ones are dopamine, oxytocin, and testosterone. So testosterone really is, increases in testosterone really are associated with higher sex drive, higher sexual frequency. And so we know that's an important element of, you know, how our body is functioning. We know men have higher levels of testosterone, and that's why they generally have higher levels of sexual desire as well. But a few things are happening as women kind of transition out of pregnancy and their body starts to regulate. They may still be nursing. And so we know nursing is associated, every time a woman lets down, she has a little increase in oxytocin, which sometimes is called the attachment chemical. So we know that it has a really important function for helping us attach to our children, but oxytocin also creates kind of this feeling of satisfaction and this feeling of attachment. And so we know it also suppresses testosterone. And so that's why women who are nursing may have just naturally a lower sex drive. Not only may they be feeling some fatigue, but as far as the chemistry of their body, they're not feeling as much of a need for sex. So that's something that we also can be aware of. It's interesting, in Helen Fisher's research, she talks about, how do we maintain a vibrant sex life in a long-term relationship? And she said, well, one thing that helps us fall in love is high levels of dopamine. When we're dating, we have high levels of dopamine. We're really curious about this person. Everything they say is interesting because everything is so new. And so that creates heightened levels of dopamine in our brain. How can we simulate that experience in a long-term relationship? Some suggestions are, try a new activity together. Bring up a new issue that is interesting to both of you to talk about. Be different. Get outside the box. Be creative. Instead of always having sex on the same day in the same room, maybe go and spend a weekend in a hotel and create this newness in your life. See each other anew. Esther Perel talks about seeing each other with new eyes. That's really important for us to maintain healthy sexuality in long-term relationships.
I like what you were saying. As you were talking about the hormones that are associated with nursing and things, I was thinking, you know, it's not even just with nursing that women deal with hormonal changes through motherhood. A lot of women might be dealing with birth control, and that may involve some hormones too, and that can make things a little crazy. Or as you move towards menopause, you may have some hormonal changes and things too. So I like what you said about kind of seeking out that dopamine or those other ways that you can kind of counterbalance maybe some of what's going on also. My biggest suggestion is always chocolate. I'm sure that's like the number one hormone replacement.
Yeah, but you know, what you're saying is important. It's necessary for us to be aware of what these hormonal changes create in our relationship.
And I think looking at it too as maybe an opportunity instead of a failure, when these things, when it doesn't, you know, whatever the tried and true, you know, behaviors have been in the past and they seem to be not working, and you're saying, Shalom, like, look ahead. How can you change things up? Is it a setting kind of issue? Is it, you know, do you need to have a babysitter over so you can actually just have a nap and then feel a little less fatigued? And then maybe that'll kind of give you a boost. But I think it's important, like, we think about all of those changes, and like, you're back to the remodel idea. How many changes? I mean, walls have been removed and windows replaced or whatever. All of this stuff is so different. But I think we have to understand that sex changes throughout your lifespan, and it can change from week to week, and it can change from day to day. And just being willing to grow with that and have this mindset of, you know what, this is an adventure, and it's going to be an adventure I'm on with my husband, and we're going to grow together, and you have to be flexible and change with it, I think.
I love the idea of growing together. As you're all talking, I'm kind of thinking how this is also a really good opportunity to communicate these changes with your partner and to just talk about the fact that you might feel lower desire and kind of clue in your partner to what you're feeling so they understand what you're going through. And then that way they might even have some ideas too of how they can contribute and they can serve you and find ways to help you feel loved, even if it may not be through penetrative sex. Or they might, you know, spend more time with just foreplay or helping you feel satisfied in other ways. And that might even spark something in you that, you know, you might not feel the sexual drive to initiate anything. But if you're wanting their support in it, then your partner can help you, and it can be a process that you go through together.
You know, it's interesting because research has shown what some of the biggest turn-ons for women, especially women who are also mothers, two of the biggest turn-ons for women are men doing dishes and taking care of children. Because this transition is, we have given our life over. Hopefully both the man and the woman have given their life over to raise this child, to make sure that this child has a successful environment in which they can develop. So it really is something that, as we transition to parenthood, both men and women have to be aware of all of these changes going on in the woman's body, because she's the one who has carried and then delivers and then most likely nurses this baby. And so that's going to have an impact. And it's a pretty beautiful thing to watch two young people go through this just all in. Like, they just want to be successful in helping this child develop, but then also helping each other develop and have their needs met. We have these crazy societal expectations that say we can't be a mother and a sexual being. It's so beautiful when we see a couple just reject that and blend these two elements of the life cycle together so that they can create a strong bond in their marriage. That's it for this week. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Sexual Mindfulness Project, and subscribe to our website, shalomlevitt.com, to stay up to date with the latest information on sexual mindfulness. Thanks for listening.